You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. This is part two of my interview with Tanika Stotts. So if you haven't heard part one, pause this and go back and take a listen. Still here? Great. On with the interview. I love hearing about your experience on Steven Universe Futures because, like, it sounds so fluid and less departmentalized, you know, because, like, there are so many shows where, like, the writers and artists don't mingle, don't talk, and sometimes dissuaded to, you know, talk and mix up. So, like,
I'll spill the secret. Rebecca is incredible. First off, working with someone who is so emotionally invested into their characters and work was just awe-inspiring because that's how I felt about my characters in just comics. But being able to connect with these characters and tell different points of views with them after so many years, I'm talking, you know, 7 years preceded me before I got into that room. So you want to come in with a certain form of respect, but you also want to come in and see what's new that you can create. But I got to instead see a board of things that were already possibilities. They had these large show boards of, it was from like season 5 or 6 or so. And it was just these show title cards of episodes they didn't get to do. And I was like, that's it right there. Well, Steven Universe Future is not only the future of Steven and all of his friends, but also your future, like the future of my storyboarders, like the future of Rebecca. Like, where are y'all going after this? But also, what is your lasting statement? What is that last piece you want to leave with your audience? I wanted to be really respectful of that. So I incorporated what I was seeing on that board, which was they already had like their own in-house AU for Steven Universe, you know, and it was called Steven University. And I thought that was so cool. So, you know, that's kind of how we got a little bit on board with, you know, all of the gyms teaching and how that was going to move forward for other gyms to learn. And I thought that was so cool. And it was all ready there. The blueprint for it was on that wall. It just hadn't been formed yet, right? So after we knew that, like, it was really easy to finish working on the show. But also at the same time, I thought it was perfect when I watched the ending before everybody else. And I was sitting in that room like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do after this? But I had that support and I had that system that was behind me to tell me that I could do kind of anything. And also, we got together, and Rebecca was the best part about this. Rebecca opened up the writer's room every lunch period. Everybody was invited to come have lunch with us. It didn't matter where you worked. If you were a PA, who I love, by the way, mm-hmm. if you were a storyboarder, if you were a background artist, if you were whoever, we just watched anime on the big TV, and it was great. I loved it. Who else wants to eat sushi, watch anime, and then go back to work, right?
That sounds great. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So one other thing, because, like, you know, you mentioned getting kind of like a call or email out of the blue from Rebecca back at the start of this interview. And, like, obviously inside me, I'm screaming, big Steven Universe fan. It's like, well, I want to come back to it now. So one thing I feel like, some people are afraid to share their opinions out in the world or on social media and be their true self, right? I also feel like you've done that so well in everything that you've created and, like, what you've put out into the world that people come and find you. Like, when you let your, like, lighthouse shine, mm-hmm. there's going to be, you know, boats finding you. Yeah. So, like, what did it feel like being recognized for all the hard work that you were doing? Because no one has been asking you to make your comics. You were like, I'm going to go make my comics because I want to. And we don't need validation, but it definitely feels nice, right? So, like, can you talk about that process and what it felt like to be like, oh my gosh, it's been working.
Well, I think it was also part of other moving parts that were, like, outside of my scope or field of vision. I know that many people were up for this possible opportunity as it was. You know, it's a writing opportunity, and there are many other comic writers out there that are better than me, and I'm okay with saying that. You know why? Because I read their stuff and I love it. There are other writers that I'm like, that's not the direction I would go with this, but I've still edited that work for them because that is the job that I signed on to do. I am not there to steer that into a different direction. I can open a conversation and say, hey, do you want to think about this a little bit more? But I'm not there to completely just neuter or kibosh their dreams. So for me, I still am just proud of the time that I got to talk to Rebecca about it. And I was just like, hey, you know, like, I was just curious, what work did you see that inspired you to even like be okay with me on this project? And Rebecca was honest and was just like, I really liked Love Circuits. And I was like, ah, yeah, okay, you know, cool. Like, you know, Love Circuits is about robots and humanity, and it's an unfinished comic. It is absolutely unfinished. You know, life happens. I can't dedicate myself to a free comic 24/7. I also need to pay my bills and and eat. But it was out there enough where people read it and they were really into it and they wanted more. And that obviously made whatever impression it did upon Rebecca to therefore then consider me for that job. And that's wonderful. Even having just a piece of yourself, if not the full story, but just a small piece of yourself out there is really powerful. It shows that you're not afraid, that you have a vision, that you have a direction that you would like to go into. And this is what I'm making available for the masses to enjoy. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be finite. It can change if you want to reboot it later on. That is something that I've just learned over the years from not only just being in comics, but, you know, with animation, it's different. I can't go back and I can't change things after they're set in stone. So I was a little intimidated at first because my process didn't match that process. But at the end of the day, I found that there were enough people in that room for a storyboard-driven show, for the punch-up that we did on dialogue and everything like that. Everybody else had your back. Everybody else wanted to make sure that what was about to come out of that was going to be really fly. And I think it wasn't just Rebecca at that point. It was also, you know, Ian. It was also Kat. It was also Hillary. It's that staff that existed, those voices that have been there to be Rebecca's backbone, to protect them, and also to help them understand that they're not alone in this journey. Because you're not. And that's the best part.
There was another thing I wanted to circle back to as well. Oh, first though, love Circuits as well as Casual Hacks. I check it like once a month. I'm like, is there more? So I hope to come to them someday. But like, yeah. I never thought about unfinished work being helpful in that it could still connect with someone. So that's so cool to hear that it can. Because I always think, like, if I start something and don't finish it, that just reflects poorly on me. But, like, you do what you can, and you're so right. Like, you can't put all the focus on making a free comic.
No, I can't. Yeah. And I can't just do something forever. Like, I love people, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, I can't just, like, commit myself wholly to something that, one, does not help me keep the lights on whatsoever, put food on my table. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm not 22 anymore, right? I'm not.
Amen.
I'm not staying up 24 hours and, you know, like doing a lot of this stuff. I'm getting older, and I have to think about the investment in myself, which isn't just an IRA or a pension. It's also, what is my end game? Where would I like to be in that older form of myself, my career, and who I am as an individual? And what I'd like to be is a person who can not only just speak my truth, but also live in a place that doesn't feel like constant tyranny. So to do that, I am creating the kind of path that I would like to continue in my career to make sure that that exists for me, my family, and my family, as in like my found family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I always feel, I feel something similar in doing the podcast because it's been so sporadic.
Yeah.
and it's like, yeah, it's a lot of work. And although sometimes I think, because I also mentor a lot.
Yeah.
And while I want there to be change, I'm also so tired. So
yes. Often.
And like, I want to do my best work. And it's so wild trying to figure out what to balance. But I love that you're like looking to the future, what the vision is for yourself, and then kind of working backwards. I think that is so helpful.
And I hope it's helpful for a lot of people going forward, because they also need to understand. I know that some people are really in a rush at a younger age to do things because they feel that they're a failure if they don't get it done before they're 30. I'm going to tell you right now, you're probably not going to feel even comfortable in your skin as an individual until you're 27. Your 30s are incredible. Your 40s are better. Your 50s are when you become a swinger. Your 60s, no, like, you know, everybody's life is different. So what I'm trying to say is stop rushing yourself. Take a break. Go get some boba. Chill with your friends. Have those late night game nights. Have those epic D&D sessions. Enjoy life as you're living it. And don't just think of it as moments to be compartmentalized into, this is me and this is what I do and I need to be recognized for that, because you're gonna change. Everybody changes. Just like I did slam poetry for a few years, it's not the end all be all of my life. I've done comics for a few years, again, not the end all be all of my life. And I've had like 16 jobs between those, from everything from working in computer spaces, doing debugging for Disney, a company that I then got to write for, by the way, who has no idea that I ever worked in a small third-party lab in Beaverton, Oregon for them. That's the thing. Life will take you where it wants. And you got to just kind of be ready with your sails to kind of either weather the storm or just go in the direction it's blowing you. And I just want people to know that you need to stop thinking that these moments were the only ones that you could have had. And if you didn't have it, then everything's over. It's not. The sun's going to rise the next day, and you just need to get ready for, how do you want to spend your day? How do you want to treat yourself? What is it that you have to do to survive right now? And stop thinking of it as a kind of manacle around your neck. It's not. It's you surviving, and you shouldn't feel guilty for that.
Very well said. I just love hearing you talk. I never want this to end. Like, because, like, you blow me away constantly. Like, and I know that we just, like, recently started actually talking, because I've, like, adored you from afar for a long time.
Yeah.
But, like kind of going back to what you said about, like, after Steven Universe, you then learned how to script. That is such a wild statement, because it's like, hit over everyone's head to be really good at formatting, to have like strong episode structure, all this stuff. Uh-huh. But like, we get so tripped up in trying to focus on getting better at that, is that like, there is some sort of like winging it and learning on the job, and kind of going back to some of these training programs, these diversity initiatives, like there's like these pre-development programs to get into development programs to then be considered for entry-level jobs.
Yes.
And like, you could just skip all that and get the job. Like, for writing positions in particular, it's like, you know, you could go the production path like I did. That was the only ladder I could find, right? But you don't have to do that. You could end up in a writer's room like you did from the other career that you were doing. It happens. And I think that's what's so wild about Hollywood in particular, because I feel like it happens probably more here than most other industries.
Yes.
But like some schmo off the street could start a business and be a CEO too, you know? Like there's only a perceived structure, this thing that we've always seen out there, but you can bypass all of that. Like,
yes.
And I love that, because I get that sense from you, is that like, you don't need permission. You're going to go do the thing you want to do. If they want to, like, you know, help you do the thing or give you the platform to do it, yeah, you're going to take that, you know?
Yes.
So it's so inspiring just to hear just anything on your mind, honestly. I don't know. You're just like a genius.
No. I am far from a genius, but what I am is just a person who has lived on this planet long enough to know that people are going to want things in their own directive way, right? I've had people who have been like, what is this word, Tanika? And I was like, oops. And they're like, you spelled it ops. And I was like, oh, and then I had to Google oops versus ops, right? To be like, oh, that's so funny. Which is the right spelling? But at the end of the day, did I really care? Yes, actually I did, because it was for the record draft and I don't want the actor to therefore say ops
right
when they're standing there with the line. But were they kind of calling me out maliciously? Yeah they were. But like, also at the end of the day, I was just like, thanks for catching it, do your job, now fix it. So it was like you pointed it out, so now it's gonna get fixed, thanks. That's momentum for me. Now everybody will think I am this genius writer that never makes a single mistake in the script. Lies, Liza Minnelli, lies. I make lots of mistakes in my scripts, and I will go back. I will learn from them. I have an entire wall full of post-it notes to remind me of things. Every show I work for has a different effing format, from titles and how people like to just like adhere to the top of the script format, and I think that's wild and kind of stupid sometimes, but whatever. I just copy paste whatever was already there and do the same exact thing. If they don't send me a script format purely for their show, then I just wing it. I don't get paid enough to care that deeply sometimes about those structure things. That is why they have script assistants. No offense, script assistants, I'm not putting everything on you, but that is literally a job so that they can learn to and also fix things. Not saying that I'm dismissing them or disparaging them by not giving it 1,000% my all, but I have gaps in my learning. It is natural. Therefore, I am very grateful to these people who exist to not only catch that, but to fill in those gaps and to help me continue, as I will help them to continue. End of story.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say that there's been two scripts that I've read over the past few years. They're like original pilots. It wasn't for a show or anything.
Yeah.
But they were done by writers who were still learning how to write a script. You know, they were great writers in different fields, but they hadn't written a script before.
Yes.
And you know, at first, like first few pages, I'm like, "Whoof, this formatting is all over the place." But then, like 5 pages in, I was hooked, and it was like such great storytelling, you know. And I feel like we're losing out on a lot of great writers just because like the formatting is off. And I know that like that's part of being a professional, is knowing what the industry standard is. Mm-hmm. But like, wow, like these two scripts, I've just blown away, you know. Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of producers and editors out there that say that when they read scripts, they'll give you like maybe 3, 5, 8 pages and then they move on.
Yes.
So like, they're like, make your first 3 pages like shine.
Yeah.
Which is obviously everything in your control is make your script better.
Yes.
Do what you need to do, you know. So like, keep revising, everyone, for sure. But yeah, like, I feel like on our side as professionals looking to bring other people into our rooms,
yes,
we do need to be conscientious and like have some veterans and have some new people as well.
Yes, I love the mix of veterans with newcomers, but also I'm not gonna lie, I moved from a position of, you know, being just a story writer to a story editor. I got to read, you know, like 200 scripts to choose some of the writers that were going to come into our room. And I also had to convince them to hire a writer who joined our team for Pinecone and Pony with no scripts at all, no spec. All they had was a comic script, because I was like, hey, look, this person did the entire graphic novel for She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. Not only did they nail this graphic novel completely and the voices of these characters, but I was trying to show them the correlation of how comics and cartoons are not that far off from each other whatsoever. And we hired that artist. Their name, GGDG. They came on board, had their whole comic, Cucumber Quest, every accomplishment and accolade that I could think of behind them, and yet nobody knew them in this industry. I'll tell you now, they know them now. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning of their journey into whatever they want to do after that. But I wanted to make a point, which is that you cannot define people just because of a format. And also, I'll tell you now, while I was reading those scripts, If you do not impress me in the first 5 pages, I put it down. I won't lie to you. I have a lot of people that I have to go through. And at the end of the day, I do love reading the full story, but you really need to bring it hard at that beginning and that middle and then get me to the end. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, that's good practical advice when it comes to getting work, for sure. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, when you're like 200 scripts, I was like, I don't even know how.
I have an entire, I made a spreadsheet on Google Docs so that my showrunner could see as I was going through each script. Not only did I mark and note it for potential, but I would then be able to move up if a script was like, you know, way later in the list. I could then just easily move it up and be like, hey, could you please put your eyes on this one? And that's how I ended up getting Pilot, who is just an incredible writer. But they came from live action, and their entire view of how they write is kind of more dialogue based, you know? Live action isn't you giving the stage directions. It's not a play. You're not there making the set. But you are leaving these open opportunities for your actors to reinterpret those emotions as to how they will be performed. That's the same as a storyboarder. So, again, the same thing.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I want to respect your time because I know we're going over.
No worries. I don't care.
Okay. But we'll wrap up.
Okay.
This next part is... just kind of supposed to be fun. I don't know. You could tell me if it is.
Go for it.
Who's one of your favorite figures from animation history or comics history?
Oh, okay. So my favorite figure from animation history is Dan Haskett. I got to meet Dan while I was at Cartoon Network. I was like, hi, can I take a selfie with you? And I know this man was just like, who are you? Because I had not done anything in animation yet. And he was there with his wife chilling at the, I think it was one of the BWA events at Cartoon Networks. That's the Black Women Animates events that happened at the Cartoon Network. And I was just like, you're a living icon, like a literal living icon next to a lot of people that are also living icons. Like, I'm getting to meet Dan Haskett. I was just fanboying all over the damn place. And he takes this picture with me, and I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going to post it anywhere publicly. But those, I've met, you know, very big stars that cannot make me break in that way. My heroes in this industry are Black people who have been able to put up with what they've been able to put up with for as long as they have and are still here. And those are my heroes. Those are the people that I want to honor and that I want to make sure future generations know their damn names. So that's who I got to meet. And that was an incredible moment for me because there are so many things I wanted to tell that man. But like, you know, 5 minutes and us all leaving, I couldn't do it in that space. But it was just an honor, an absolute honor to meet him. And if you don't know who Dan Haskett is, I ask you to just take some time out of your day, Google him, look him up, read a little bit about him and figure it out. Because there are so many hidden, not hidden figures, I hate using that term, there are so many hidden gems in this industry that have allowed it to continue on, and you don't even know half of who they are just because they're just individuals who just like to live their life quietly.
Exactly. I tried so hard to get Brenda Banks on this show.
Oh, wow.
In particular, and I sent her a letter.
Yes.
And never got a response. I couldn't find a phone number or anything. But, like, you're so right. And I also feel like so many of us have to work so hard just to stay active in the industry that, like, sometimes you don't have the energy to do things like podcasts or interviews.
Yes.
I do wish that, you know, more people would, because I think it's so important. Mm-hmm. But Dan Haskett is so sweet. I met him when I worked on the 7D. He was on another show on my floor, and we had lunch with my friend Coco because they were friends. So she introduced me, and he was just so sweet. And I was, like, floored when I discovered his story because, like, we all hear about Glenn Keane in Ariel, right?
Yes.
Beautiful animation, yes. Not disparaging him. Wonderful yes. animator.
Yeah.
But Dan Haskett was part of designing that character.
Yes.
Like Carol Holiday, right? Like, she should have been directing some fucking features up
yes.
in here.
Yes.
And she's, it hasn't, you know, or yeah. maybe she did one, but like, it is so disappointing to see how many fantastic artists out there that we have not even heard about. You
oh,
know?
Yeah. I
so
mean,
like, and they're right? so sweet, and I would be fucking mad if that was me.
and, you know, I am kind of mad because I'm like, where is the respect for our elders, you know, sometimes in this industry? And we do have a respect, but also at the same time, we just kind of move on to what's new and flashy, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm old and trashy. You know, if you want to talk to me about Brave Little Toaster, I can go on about that and just how that completely was the saddest, most coolest thing I had ever seen in my life. That junkyard scene
100%
lives with me forever. Like, there are things about animation that have just impressed upon us who we are as individuals to this very day. To this day, we still cut up six packs because we know it will harm dolphins and Captain Planet will be sad. These are the reasons why we make animation. These are the reasons why we tell the stories that we do and hope that it doesn't just like go as a blip on the radar, right? It's not just a moment or a pulse. It is something that we live with, and it's something that we can give to future generations. That is what animation is about.
Mm-hmm.
And also Fern Gully. Just good thing.
Yes.
Fern Gully forever. Hell yeah.
Oof. Toxic sludge, like, haunts my nightmares.
Toxic Love is one of dopest songs ever. Tim Curry, you are my...
So good.
Mm. Everything. If I can, that's what we get to do now, Cassie. We get to say, hey, I wrote this story and I was thinking of Richard Ayoade. I wrote this story and I was thinking the perfect voice is Keith David. I wrote this story and I want you to stunt cast freaking, I don't know, Lizzo, because I want big girls to be yes. big and I want them to sound the way that they should, which is big, loud, and proud.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, God, you got me so excited to be a creator. Like, you know, I feel like also like we're just like, oh, I got to get the next job where I just do the thing that I want to do, which is
yes.
right. But also like everyone in animation has an opportunity to go pitch things or,
yeah.
you know, maybe you need to move a little bit or connect with someone to get you that opportunity. But like it's within your reach if you're already working here. A lot of studios take pitches from inside.
That
so like
correct.
You could like. I just like the idea that we could be thinking bigger, you know,
yes.
about influence and the good we can put into the world, you know? So love that. And I just wanted to also pitch out, and probably everyone knows about this podcast, Black and Animated, amazing
yeah.
interviews. They interviewed Dan Haskett. So like definitely check
yes.
that one out. Yeah. And they interviewed you. So
yes!
go listen to some more of Tanika.
No, don't listen to more of me. Go listen to more Dan. Go listen to more animators, just in general. Like, mm-hmm. animation is animation. There are so many wild, incredible ways that we've created it. There are so many wild and creative ways that we've broken it. And that's okay. It's that kind of field. It's like high art. It's low art. It's just art sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Go have fun.
Yes. Okay. So who's one of your favorite animation professionals working right now and why?
You're going to be like, that's the cheap answer, but it's not. It is Rebecca Sugar. I've never worked with someone who I found so dedicated to their craft, who has learned the lesson of do not kill yourself to be in this craft. A person who literally used to tell a story and told me the story too, of how they worked themselves to the point where they had to end up in the hospital once, right? Because they were so overworked while they were in school and trying to just do everything. And how the glorification of that exists at SCAD, at RISD, at other places. Like, don't do that to yourself. You're doing yourself a disservice. And now that they've aged and they've come to that realization, they know that that is not a glorification point. And that's not me telling their private story or a personal part. That is just a lived experience, even for myself, where I used to think, oh man, I'm going to be part of NaNoWriMo. I'm going to write this thing and stay up for 48 hours. Don't do that to yourself. It's just, it's kind of fun in the moment because we're 20 and we can get away with it. Right. But that does have a lasting effect on your body. It has a lasting effect on your mentality. And you do not need to do that to yourself. We are at a space where we have enough technology and we have enough advances that that is just not necessary anymore. So be kind to your body. Rebecca taught me that, and I just want to press that on to others.
It seems like a zen place where you are dedicated to your work. You know yourself really well, and there's like this like fluidity between all of it. Yes. That's the sense I get from an outside perspective.
Yeah.
But definitely one of my role models, and I love that. So what's next for you?
Well, right now I'm on vacation. Yes. I am enjoying a little bit of freedom of time and just relaxing. I started another comic anthology, more like I revived one of my comic anthologies because I have a different direction for it this time. This one will be a little bit more personal and just with a few friends, just because I don't really have the time to devote myself to, you know, just like inviting an entire slew of people. Unfortunately, I apologize, but I'm busy. But I'm working on an anthology project with friends just to be like, hey, do you want to make some comics together? Because I love you and this would be fun. And then second, I'm just working on it, my first animated short. I'm hooked up with a really incredible artist by the name of Crystal Babich. Crystal worked on Maya and the Three with Jorge Gutierrez. Is an incredible mind, an incredible talent, is deeply, deeply, deeply in love with BTS. We get along so dang well. We're working on something that we feel is lacking in the industry right now. And I think that that's kind of the freedom of making a short, right? You kind of pinpoint on something you feel has been neglected. And I'm getting into that vibe right now, and it's incredible. And part of that, I invited some comic artists that I haven't worked with in a long time to also be writers on this short, because I can, and because it's my short, and because I can do anything I want with it. But I can also, therefore, give them that credit and make that understanding of that bridge that I learned through Rebecca, which is comics ain't so different, to them as well. So I'm having them come on in. So it's just bridging those worlds in the way that I want to see it.
That's fantastic. It's such a good place to experiment in that way too. And test your limits as a creative.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
That's how we got being Puppy Cat, right?
Yes, exactly. Last question. What advice would you leave with our audience today? Or what's your final advice? That's a better question.
No. It's really good. Final advice. If you want to be a writer in this industry, everybody always says read scripts. I agree with that. But I also want you to read the scripts while you're actually watching the episode if you can. I know that's a little bit harder for people to kind of understand, but I think it would give you more of an understanding of what the final product actually is based from the script. Most of the scripts that end up on the internet, including the one that Nate Stevenson shared with She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, show you not only dynamic structure, but it shows you how we speak, right? But how we leave those open areas of opportunity for the artist to kind of finish filling in those gaps. Many people are so focused on reading the scripts that they forget what the animated episode actually ends up being. And if you kind of have that juxtaposition of seeing both at the same time, it's really wild and it will blow your mind because there are a lot of changes that happen between those moments. And I think being able to understand that those changes are going to happen and becoming comfortable with them now versus in the moment will be a much better place for you mentally than it would be for you right in that time.
Mm-hmm. Love that advice. Yeah. And that Nate's script is on Scribd.
And, yes.
It's pretty reasonably priced. You could do 1 month subscription and then read it or do the free trial. They have a free trial, I believe.
That is true.
Yeah, but animated scripts are so hard to find for TV.
I don't know.
On there. But yeah.
I don't know why they're a big secret. I have no idea. Like, I have all of my scripts, and obviously they're utilized as my quote-unquote spec when someone asks. I've been in this industry working nonstop. I have not a single spec script written yet. So they are my spec. That's it. You can work on the job, learn on the job, and move your work on the job as part of the job.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been amazing, everyone. You can see more of Tanika's work on their website, tanikastotts.com. And that's your name on all of social media, right?
That's just correct. Tanika Stotts?
Cool. Yep. So go connect. It's so lovely to talk to you on here again. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Cassie.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Toons. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle, edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.